This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
So before we get into this week's episode of Over the Influence, very, very quickly, we want to share with you some amazing news. It's been a long time in the making. It's finally here. OTI,
it's
Outdoor Adventures 2025.
Oh, I'm ready to
They're on sale. You do it as well.
The OTI Outdoor Adventures 2025 are now on sale.
Woo! Mexican way.
This year, if you would like to paddle down a river in Oxford. What's the river in Oxford called that we're paddling down on paddleboard slash
Your geography is rubbish. What is it?
Oxford, the River Cherwell.
Cherwell.
Oxford on the 11th of May. If you'd like to climb Helvellyn, one of the most beautiful mountains in the whole of the UK, Sharon's Sobriety Mountain.
It's my Sobriety Mountain, darling.
That one. 17th of May, people are already booking on. The Weekender, the Snowdon Weekend, the Sunrise Walk up Mount Snowdon, where literally last year we saw the Northern Lights on the way up. We got to the top and we watched a beautiful clear day. Shaz wasn't there because she wasn't very well. We think she might be the bad omen, but we got to the top of the mountain. We watched the sun come up over Snowdonia. It was just one of the most fabulous moments of my entire life, actually. That's happening on the 25th of July. Let's hope for some clear weather again. Then on the 6th of September, this one is selling fast. The Yorkshire Three Peaks Challenge. It's a stunning walk. I mean, it is a challenge. That's why we call it the challenge. But if you fancy something to kind of aim for this year, the 6th of September, we'll be doing that. Perfect time to do that, actually, the Yorkshire Three Peaks. You've got to be a member, though.
You do.
If you want to come on our events, you've got to be an Over the Influence member. Sign up, overtheinfluence.co.uk, and then you can book onto those. We do like WhatsApp groups, Zoom chats. Like, you get to know people before you go to these things. They're amazing. Shaz, how would you sum up our events in one sentence?
Possibly life-changing. That's it.
And people have, like, we're not just saying that, like, oh, this could actually change your life.
I've
like,
seen
that
it happen.
Is the feedback
I've
that we get.
I've seen it. I've witnessed it on the top of a mountain.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Too right.
These
too
people
right.
are nervous, a little bit anxious. Oh, can I do it? Yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
You can. In the words of Bob
ATI.
The Builder. Yes, you can. Can
and
I climb it?
Famous American. Yeah. Oh, no, yes, we can. But look, overtheinfluence.co.uk, overtheinfluence.co.uk. Join us, take part in our community, sign up for some of these events. They are fabulous. Right, shall we do a podcast?
Let's get into it.
The top regret of these people, old and young, mainly old, was that they regretted living their lives, making decisions based upon what they thought other people might think about them. So this is, what university did I go to? What subjects did I pick? What car did I drive? What clothes will I wear to my place of work? What drink might I drink to look cool? What holiday might I go on and take selfies? Get rid of all that crap and get clear, get radically clear on what's most important to you and live your life based on your terms. Be not like me, you know, the harmony side of me. Don't do that. Don't harmonize. Don't have the disease to please others. Please yourself. Lead your life on purpose. Choose to quit alcohol and stay that way day by day.
That's this week's guest on Over the Influence, James Lachlan. So he is an Irishman based in New Zealand, just coming up for 5 years, alcohol free next month. And I don't know where to start with this introduction because there is so much to talk about. World champion drummer, Antarctica, New Zealand, high performance, books, there's a lot. So what I'm going to do is stop talking and let's get into the episode and let James tell his story.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name is Aaron and I joined the Over the Influence community in January 2023 when I decided to give sober living a proper shot. I was welcomed with open arms and can proudly say that now, 2 years on, I remain alcohol free. The door to my old drinking life is well and truly closed. I wouldn't hesitate to recommend Over the Influence to anyone who is sober curious. From weekly Zoom calls to celebrating milestones on the discussion forum, however big or small. The Over the Influence community really is the bee's knees.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. It's fab to have you listening. Thank you kindly. It's going to be a packed episode today with our guests. We've just been having a little bit of a pre-chat and we've got loads to get through. So intros today, Ben, and I mean this, I say it every week, but today I mean it, are going to be short. My name is Sharon Hartley.
I'm
based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. This year, I'll be 7 years alcohol-free. Best thing I ever did. Over to you, Ben. You weren't expecting that.
That was really good. Hi, sorry, I'm flustered now. I'm Ben, 36, live in Liverpool, alcohol-free for 5 years in July. It is going to be a good episode. Have you ever wondered, do they serve alcohol-free beer in Antarctica? Well, we're going to find out the answer to that this episode.
We're going to find out.
Right, I don't know what to do now.
It's weird, I don't like short intros. I don't like it.
Okay, fine. I intended to give up alcohol for 3 months, then extended that to six. I'm just talking quicker instead of actually saying less things. I'm just talking quicker. Went to 12 months, thought, wouldn't it be cool to say I had 12 months off alcohol, a whole year alcohol-free? But on day 366, I went, come on, mate. You're better without this. Like, you're a better husband, you're a better dad, you're a better guy at work, you're better all round. Are you really going to start drinking again? I'd be daft if you did that. So then, yeah, that was nearly 5 years ago.
Can you wrap it up, Ben? You're going on a little bit now.
Done. Over to you. Who's the guest?
Thank you. Okay, today's guest, we're very, very excited. He is called James Lachlan, okay? He's based in New Zealand. He's an Irishman living there, 12,000 miles away from home. It's currently 7 a.m., breakfast time where he is, 6 p.m. our time, tea time, or if you're posh, dinner time. Coming up next month for 5 years alcohol-free. James, welcome to the chaos that is Over the Influence. Good morning. How the hell are you?
Top of the morning. So good to see you guys. Yeah, top of the morning. It's definitely 7 a.m. here, so it's definitely the right time to be saying that. I'm honored to be here with you guys. I never thought I would be on a show that would be alcohol-free, being the Irishman that I am. So this is truly a surprise and a pleasure.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thank you so much. Can I just say, you look fresh. You look really well for 7 a.m. in the morning. I look like I've been dragged through a hedge at 7 a.m. You look great.
I'll take that.
Right then, we have no idea really who you are, what you do. I mean, we've got some idea, we've got some notes and stuff like that, but it's boring if we start, you know, reeling off lists of this, that and the other. I'd love you to just start by telling us a bit about yourself and who you are, James.
Thank you. Well, I guess, Sharon, like right now, I'm a dad, I'm a partner, I'm a coach, I'm a dog dad as well. So that sums me up. If I was to go back, you know, earlier in life, I grew up in Northern Ireland, a small little working class town just north of Belfast. Both parents worked hard, neither drank. I could remember maybe dad having a beer once as a kid, mom having a Tia Maria maybe once a year. So alcohol was never part of our home life. Mom and dad divorced, but I was about 13, 14. Uncle Brian was my best mate. And so I went down to the pub with him at 13 or 14. I was the runner to the bookies for him. So I'd be running £100, £500, £5,000 across to put it on the horses. I'd be getting paid in shandies. And I realized this felt pretty cool, like sitting with the men and having a few shandies that turned into, you know, stronger and stronger shandies. So it became a weekend thing where I just began to drink often. But at the same time, I was a drummer. So my passion, my hobby was drumming. And it was a bagpipe drumming, Scottish bagpipes and drums. So I started drumming and it was very competitive. And that was the only probably positive thing in my teenagehood. I hated school. I spent way too much time at the pub. At lunchtime, I'd be in my blazer and tie at the pub. Teachers would be in the corner having their pint and the pie. We'd pretend we didn't see each other. So I had this kind of dichotomy of learning to play drums, competing and playing drums. Was fortunate to win the World Solo Championships and at 13 and then again at 14. And that really changed things for me. Opportunities came in from overseas to get out of Northern Ireland, which was timely. Things were kind of pear-shaped, not going too well. I was making poor decisions with alcohol. You know, there was a search party sent out at one point. I don't even know if my mum knows about this, but certainly my dad does. I blacked out. I was maybe 17, 18. Couldn't be found. People were looking for me in the nearest river. I would often black out. I was found underneath a car, thankfully a parked car, with no shirt on and one shoe. Not pretty, not something I'm proud of. But this opportunity to go to Vancouver Canada came in to play with a pipe band. And so I head over there for the summer and was fortunate to win another few world championships. And a school in New Zealand offered me to come down here and teach drums.
I love that.
He's so nonchalant.
And then what happened next? I just won a couple of other world championships. And then, you know, this happened. Yeah. So, oh, okay. Just a couple. Just a few extras. It's amazing.
Now, it's been good fun. It's been an interesting ride. And I guess through all the things that have happened, alcohol was always there. And alcohol was a great stress relief, or so I thought. Alcohol was a great celebrant, or so I thought. Alcohol was a great way to, you know, finish off a week, to celebrate somebody getting married, to celebrate a day done at work. So as I was high performing in this drumming world and winning world championships and helping others do the same, and my personal life was really low performing, and my relationship was definitely on a downward spiral. My body was doing the same thing. Relationship ended in divorce. So something that I'm not proud of, something, you know, I look back and go, I could take a lot of responsibility for not putting the effort in. And alcohol plays a huge part in that. The conflicts in my life all revolve around alcohol. And so, there's a time came that I thought, you know, enough's enough, because I don't feel good. I don't look good. I feel proud of myself. As a dad, I was a young dad at the time. I don't want to be this kind of dad who's not present and who doesn't have the energy to go and kick a rugby ball and have a bit of fun. And so, yeah, there was a changing point that came, and that took a long time because alcohol was such an important part of my life. And I'm James the Irishman. And, you know, in New Zealand, it's like, oh, good time. Hang out with James. Meet James at the pub. James is a good laugh. Get a few drinks and James, he'll be funny. So it was kind of part of my identity. I hosted the big St. Paddy's party every year. People would come around and get kegs. And so for me, it was kind of like saying goodbye to it was scary. The thought of saying goodbye, like saying bye to my social circle, to my, you know, my comfort, the way I could relax. So there was a lot of things attached to drinking.
And can I just ask you about that whole saying goodbye to it? Because so many people that we speak to, and this applies to myself and to Ben as well, you know, when we started out doing this, removing alcohol, it was never saying goodbye to it. It was just parking it over there for a very short amount of time. And then, of course, what we were going to do was reset and come back to alcohol like responsible, moderate, you know, grown-up drinkers. And it was never, ever going to be a case of goodbye. It was only when we got further into it and you start to learn more, don't you, about yourself and peeling back the layers and all the rest of it, you're like, wow, oh, crikey, do I really want to go back there? What was that process like for you? Did you know that when you stopped, that was it? You were saying goodbye, or was it more of a gradual process?
Yeah, good question. I think there's multiple times where I stopped for like a month, like sober October, dry July. So that was fine. But I was like scrambling at the end of the month to go, like, I can't wait for the last day of the month. Like, let's go. So this one particular instance, it was COVID. I'd met this beautiful South African about, I don't know, 5 weeks before COVID. COVID's on the way. Countries are shutting down. I say, hey, Caroline, this is like do or die for us. Like, we just started dating. Do you want to get to know each other real fast? I was like, if you move in, you can move out anytime you want, but we're all going to be locked down. I'll not see you for probably 4, 5, 6 weeks. I don't know how long. Should we do that? Are you up for that? She went, yeah, let's do it. I said, look, okay, the door's there. If you're sick of me and I'm crazy, just run. It's all good. And so Caroline moved in and we're watching Game of Thrones like on repeat because there's nothing else to do during COVID. And we're drinking, I don't know, 2 bottles of wine a day, maybe a couple of gin and tonics, but prior to the wine. And about 3 weeks or maybe 2 weeks go past and Caroline's listening to a podcast and it's a ultra marathon runner. And he's talking about 1 year no alcohol. And she said, I'm going to do that. And I laughed. I says, good luck with that. That's awesome. But I'll support you, but I'm not
joining
you. Hell no, I'm not doing that. And so there's this resistance. So the next day I woke up and I said to Caroline, hey, I was kind of resistant. I'm sorry about that. I was justifying why I wouldn't do it. That's clearly a reason for me to consider doing it. I says, however, before we do it, there's a bottle of gin in the cupboard and a bottle and a half of wine tonight. Let's finish that. And then tomorrow we'll start. So the next day with a God almighty hangover, we started 1 year no alcohol. And I knew what I was like. I would quit easy. I had things coming up like my birthday. I was hosting the prime minister and a bunch of my clients up on a bloody mountain in Queenstown, which is like a ski resort. So we're going to fly up on helicopters, land, have champagne. I'm like, God, I'm going to want to drink the champagne. Like, this is a special moment. And all these reasons to drink. And so I got out a piece of paper that first day and I wrote why. But why? So I wrote, I want to be a better dad. I want to, if I'm lucky enough to be a granddad, I want to be fit, healthy, well, and alive. I do want a better looking body and a better feeling body. I do want more money in my back pocket. I spend so much money on alcohol. I do want to be remembered as consistent, a guy that shows up with compassion, with patience, with love, not this guy that's, you know, three drinks in and all of a sudden it's a joke or a character that turns up. So I had about 15, 20 reasons why, and I read those every day. And I thought about those. And I thought about the opposite of those. What would it be like to be a crap dad? What would it be like to be dead instead of being here to see my grandchild if I'm lucky enough to be a granddad? And so that really got me through the first couple of months. And we bought so much tea. It's not even funny. We drank so many Heineken Zeros. And I can't stand the thought of having another one of those. But we drank so much tea. We had this like substitution, this replacement. We were fanatics, obsessed. And it was tough. Sharon, it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
It was definitely tough.
Can I ask, James, are you a better dad, would you say, now that you're nearly 5 years alcohol-free?
The only person that can answer that properly is Finn. He's 8 and a half now. Yeah. But I would say yes. And
he's getting ready
Caroline
for school,
would say
isn't
yes.
He? At the moment.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's getting ready for school.
Can't interrupt.
And I think his mum would say yes as well. Lisa would 100% say yes. I think I'm more patient. Mm-hmm. More connected, I've got more energy, clearer thinking.
Yep. I'm just going through the list. Does your body feel better?
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
100%.
Have you got
my body looks better now than it did 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. More money in your back pocket?
Let me share this with you. You'll laugh. There's this Tick. This little app, and I look at this every now and then. It's called Sobriety Counter.
I love this.
And so 4 years, 11 months, $51,179
Wow.
Saved.
Amazing.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Caroline's the same. So $100,000 between us.
Wow. That's quite incredible. Are you more consistent now?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you show up with compassion, patience and love?
My patience is like, I was a very impatient person, incredibly impatient. I'd say I'm way more patient, loving, absolutely. Mm.
You've ticked them all off. So everything you wanted on your why list is happening, which is fabulous.
Mm. Feels awesome.
Are you would you say you're quite a disciplined person, James, in general?
In general, yes. There'll be certain areas maybe where I'm not, but yes. I geek out on high performance. So I work with athletes and teams and companies.
And prime ministers.
All around the habits of high performers. Yeah, prime ministers. Yeah, politicians as well. All around what makes them tick and how we can sustain high performance. So discipline is one of the key pillars of that. So as a drummer, as a kid, to be a half-decent drummer, you've got to be up for repetition, like doing the same thing over and over and over. So it takes discipline, but I guess the one thing, Ben, I've figured out is when you're disciplined for long enough, it just becomes a habit. So like you and I brushing our teeth, we just do it. It's a habit. Mm. And so the discipline eventually just becomes automatic.
The reason I ask is I've been reading your website, which is very impressive. And then you turn up on this Zoom screen and you've got a fabulous microphone and you've got a hoodie with your podcast on the hoodie. And you've got a very lovely, well-curated Zoom background. Very different to how we show up, James.
Indeed, so different to how we show up.
We're just looking, that's the washing just there.
There's my boiler. Sorry, there's my boiler that's blurred up in the boiler room. Okay.
But, you know,
this is what makes you guys awesome.
I mean, it's we are unique in the space.
Shoddy is what we are, Ben. We're shoddy.
Yeah. Part of our charm, though, we like to think. But were you ever going to fail? You know, once you decided this, you know, right, I've had this conversation, I've reacted in a way that actually maybe I should think about doing this. I'm writing down my whys. Were you ever going to fail, James? Was that ever in your head?
You know what? I think there was always that inkling that this is not going to be easy and that there will be temptation and that I've given up in the past. I've done a lot of personality diagnostics for clients and for myself. And one of the strengths that my number one strength from this particular test was harmony. And I thought, whoa, that's cool. I seek harmony. But actually, your greatest strength is often your greatest weakness. And I often want to create harmony for other people and don't like to be too candid, don't want to be blunt with others. And so I'll hold back. And I haven't always been like that, but I'd say the last 10 years as an adult, very much like, how do we keep the peace? And so with alcohol, the thought of being at someone's party or someone's invited me somewhere special and they want to celebrate, the thought of saying no was deeply painful. And I was worried about, just one, it's all good. Just one will be fine.
Well, you're Irish
but
James.
I can't do one.
You're Irish James in New Zealand, you know. It's almost exactly. It's almost an obligation, James, because of the place that you were born, obviously.
That's it. Mm. If people assume that, right? 100%. And for me, I got to change my identity. So I thought, what's an easy way to do this to get people to support me, particularly my clients, because we meet often and there's a lot of socializing. So I thought, I'm going to say to them, I've got a one-year challenge. God, it's going to be hard. I need your support. It's a one-year challenge I've set. Caroline's doing it too. Can you support me? And honestly, not one of them were like, oh, James, wind your head in. Like, you're an idiot. They were all like, God, I couldn't do that. Good on you. I'll support you. So that got me through the first year. Just letting them know it was a challenge. It meant I didn't need to seek harmony and please everyone. I could just say, it's a challenge. I got to do it. Can you help me? That was massively helpful. So that helped on the discipline front, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really brave when someone does that. They kind of come straight out. But yeah, I can totally see how that would work. You know, we haven't known each other for long, James. All of 19 minutes. Well, and the little preamble that we had before. But, you know, there's definite benefits, isn't there, in kind of, you know, just saying it from the off. This is what I'm doing. Set your intentions. Let everyone know. Then you're accountable. That's why people join OTI. That's why they join our community. You know, they might not want to do that in terms of their circles at this point, but being able to say it out loud, this is my target. This is what I'm aiming for, to people who kind of understand it and get it, is really helpful to do that. It's interesting because, you know, I think from everything that you talk about, you know, discipline runs through it, consistency runs through it. And so I'm glad to know that you are human, James, and that there were some little seeds of doubt in there as well, because let's be honest, it's hard. It's a hard thing to do in a society where everyone does it all the time. Can I ask now, Shaz, do they have alcohol-free beer in Antarctica, James?
Oh, you just couldn't help yourself, could you? I thought you were going to wait longer for this. Right. We need to give it context as well. James.
Why were you in Antarctica?
Yeah, yes. Why? Tell us
and
what.
Do they
what?
Have alcohol-free beer?
Yes, so interesting. I never imagined going to the ice, like the most faraway place, the Antarctic. I'm in New Zealand and you might think it's close, but it's still an 8-hour flight on a Air Force Hercules with the American Air Force. So
cool.
This organization approached me.
It's
cool. Mental.
Oh, when are we going to get on a Hercules, Sharon? When are we going to get called to go on a Hercules flight?
Listen, it's budget hotels for us and budget airlines all the way, Ben.
No, it is.
So just get used to it.
Yeah. It's a bit of a treat when we go for a car free and put it on expenses.
It is. It really is.
I love it. Well, this organization asked me to go down. It wasn't a holiday, that's for sure. Flights, trips down there, you can't really holiday there. There's one cruise out of Argentina. I think it's $25,000. So I wouldn't be getting on that. So this was New Zealand government. They wanted me to go down and work with the winter leader. So it goes from 150 people at Scott Base in the summer to 12 people in the winter. It goes from 24 hours of daylight to 24 hours of darkness. So these 12 people have this base. The weather's horrific. It's minus 50. They've got challenges. The smallest things could set them off in terms of, if you put the teaspoon in the damn wrong place, like, what the hell? People can erupt. There's something on the news right now, actually, came up this morning in the South African base in Antarctica. One of the scientists has threatened to kill another one and they can't get out. There's no getting out. And so there's this big hole.
I saw this, James. I've just read about this today.
Yeah. So it's a really intense place. So culture is so important. So my job was to go down there essentially and work with the leader and his team to create a team charter, team values, expectations above the line and below the line. So when I got down there, they had a pub. It's one of the only stations in Antarctica to still have a pub. It's called the Tathy Flag. And it's quite hilarious. It's the Tathy Flag.
It's these crackers.
Oh, it's brilliant. So I go into the pub and there's, you know, Guinness. There's all this. I says, hey, do you by any chance have anything alcohol free? She went, yeah, we've got a selection that you're
as
having.
If.
Yeah.
As
and
if.
It was in. brilliant. It was New Zealand Garage Project, I think is the company. It was their alcohol-free beer. They had two hazy, one IPA, one APA. So I was able to have a few beers and enjoy that. And yeah, it was brilliant. Good fun. So yeah, they do in Antarctica, they have alcohol-free beer.
How long were you in Antarctica for, James?
Just a week. They flew down with on the Hercules, which, by the way, if you think of budget airline, go like five levels lower than that. Like you're knee to knee with someone facing you. You're in full extreme cold weather gear in case the plane crashes into the Southern Ocean. So,
oh, please don't.
Yeah, you're sweating in this thing. It's noisy as hell. You've got big earmuffs on. It's not pleasant. So yeah, I'd rather go with Ryanair any day.
You know what, though? One of our listeners, we've got the most fabulous listeners in the world, James, but there's also a few nut jobs in there. Someone's listening to that now going, oh, I fancy that. we're going to get an email, Shaz, being like, oh, I ever thought about an OCR trip to... We will.
Yeah, to Antarctica.
We will.
Yeah, I'll put it on the list.
The Chilly Irishman. Let's go to the Chilly Irishman and have an alcohol-free beer in Antarctica.
I love it.
Sorry, the tatty flag.
Tatty flag.
So good.
That is incredible. So, my head's all over the show with this episode. Like, it really is.
We've gone from world championship drummer
yeah, to being paid in shandies as a teen to... Yeah. Have we actually established, James, how you ended up in New Zealand doing what you're doing? And I'm not sure we have.
Yes.
No, we haven't.
It was an opportunity. Have we not? Sorry.
Yeah, so,
sorry.
Yeah, probably not.
Not in any depth.
For the drumming. No?
It was through drumming, yeah. So essentially, sitting on the step of my dad's house and the phone rings.
I got lost.
Christchurch, New Zealand. And I said, put the hand over the phone. I said, Dad, where's New Zealand? And he laughed. And all I could think
how old were you, James? How old were you at this point?
15.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
15, so
right.
Still a teenager. And it was a private school in New Zealand. And my heart dropped. I was like, God, I'm barely scraping through this normal school. How the hell would I fit in a private school? So I said, you know, how can I help you? Like, well, they're like, well, we've got a pipe band. I was like, okay, now I'm listening. This is interesting. No New Zealanders have ever won the world championships in bagpiping or drumming. We'd love you to help us become the first, run the drumming program and become the first. I'm like, are you serious? I said, how far away are you? I said, oh, we're 12,000 miles. And I was like, this is just joy. The thought of being so far away from this kind of chaotic life I'd created for myself. But I had to finish high school. So did that. 2 days later, I was 18 at the time, got on a flight and headed south. And my job was to help this school become world champions. That was my mission. It took 8 years, 3 attempts, and they went to Glasgow and became world champions. And still the first and only to do that. It's not my secret sauce at all. It's the fact that there's three things we've got to do to be the best. And I see this across sport, business, life, investment. You've got to have a high-performance skill set, high-performance mindset, and a high-performance heart set, that belief, that true belief that you can do the thing. And I think those three things were crucial for me in giving up alcohol too. So if I bring it from me helping the school do their thing to what I did with alcohol, it's the same thing. I've got to have a skill set. I've got to be able to do it. I've got to be able to pour the tea rather than the beer. I've got to have the mindset to push through all the bullshit and the beer pressure. And I've got to have the heart set. I've got to believe I can actually do this. I can have a new identity and not be Irish drinking James.
Okay, right. So you're in New Zealand. You've achieved this fabulous thing with this school and all the rest of it. So how did you then go from doing all that, being called to New Zealand to help this team, to doing what you do today? And please explain exactly what it is you do today. You've used the word high performance a lot through this episode, and we need to know more about this. Where were we up to today?
Yeah, so I'll start with today and I'll talk about the transition and how that happened. So I'm a keynote speaker. So I speak on stages for corporates, for small businesses, for conferences all over the world on high performance leadership, on how high performers carry themselves, how they lead themselves and lead others, and what the habits of high performers are. I'm also an author, so about to finish a book with HarperCollins that's coming out later in the year, all around the habits of high performers.
What's it called?
The Habits of high performers.
Okay.
That written down.
And for me, I love to work with people who want to be the best. Like I work with great people who want to be the greatest. So, you know, athletes from, I run the mental skills program for Canterbury Rugby. So rugby's just huge here in New Zealand. So I run the mental skills there. I work with a few individual athletes across different sports. And then I work with entrepreneurs and CEOs. So I take on a small number of one-to-one clients each year. I never saw myself doing that. I was James the drummer. I played drums. I sold drums. So I had a little retail business. And I taught drums. And I got to 30 and Finn was on the way. Finn arrived about 3 days before my 30th birthday. And I started to panic a bit. I thought, my left hand is starting to feel weird. I keep dropping my drumstick. Something's not right. And I was getting paid really well. I had a great little business. I was traveling the world playing drums. But I thought, if I lose the power to play drums at the level I play it at, what have I got? Like, what bread will I be putting on the table? I started to shit myself, really. And I started looking around going, what can I do? Can I get a piece of paper that qualifies me to do something other than teach drums? So it was that kind of epiphany moment that, hey, this might not last forever. So there was a Otago Polytech, which is just south of Christchurch where I live. They had this applied prior management degree called a Bachelor of Applied Management. And I thought, hey, maybe I could do that. And so this degree, the first 2 years, I was able to prove we're taken care of already through life experience, through managing teams, through running a business. So it was a one-year degree done remotely from home. And essentially what it did, it said, what have you done with your drumming stuff and helping others and building teams? What have you done there that we could unpack and repackage as different principles of leadership and management, so you can actually see value in transferable skills? So I spent a year with an incredible professor doing that, presented my thesis at the end, and came out with a lot of confidence around, whoa, I think I could transition out of drumming into helping other people in different industries, whether it's business, whether it's project management. I didn't have a very defined idea of what that would look like, but I had a bit of confidence about me that I could transition out. So did a coaching course because I thought, I'm a coach. I'd like to be a better coach, but I don't want to just always coach drummers. So I did this coaching course called Transformational Coaching for Executives. And so I went and did a two-week course and then a six-month kind of follow-up and became accredited in that. I got a few pro bono clients, thought, I'm not good enough to charge anybody for this. There's no way I'll do that. And so just, yeah, started doing some pro bono clients and got amazing feedback from that, which again, built my heart set. I was building the skill set, the mindset of being more confident to do it, but the heart set was the feedback. I thought, God, this feels good. One of them said, hey, would you come and speak to our company? Like the stories that you share to get me out of my head and into my heart, like, they'd be really helpful for our company culture. I said, like, I know nothing about big business. Like, I'm the wrong guy. You know, like, I don't even dress right. I don't think the same way as you. He went, no, that's why I want you to come in. Like, you're different. And so I went and spoke and enjoyed it. Got, again, pretty reasonable feedback. And somehow the local rugby team, and I mean, they're a very good team. They've won the national title here several times. Many of them are All Blacks and they're a phenomenal team. They reached out through Caroline, my partner, and said, we're looking for a mental skills coach. We've heard James might be able to do it. And Caroline was like, I'll say to him. I thought, but like, I know nothing about rugby. I played it when I was 9, broke my bloody ankle, never played again. I've watched it a few times on a screen. I get the basics of it, but I'm no expert. And so I met up with the head coach and said, hey, I know nothing about rugby. Like, why are we having this chat? He says, James, we don't need another expert in the building. We've got enough rugby experts. We need someone that can get the guys from their head, to their heart. And we've had some feedback that, you know, you've been speaking and you've been sharing stories and you've got the right mental skills tools. You've helped others in different, you know, these drummers. I says, look, I'll give it a shot once. If it's awful, just kick me out and no hard feelings. So I went in and again, it went really well. The feedback was great. They asked me to come back for the entire season. And from there, organically, you know, their corporate sponsors had heard about what I was doing with the players and the team. They asked me to come speak to their businesses. And then Celebrity Speakers, which is a big speaking agency here in New Zealand and Australia, they then brought me on as one of their speakers. And so it's all been really organic in terms of, I didn't intend to be a keynote speaker. I didn't intend to run any mental skills for professional athletes. It's just been kind of following interest, taking some risks, and sticking at it just day after day.
We can thoroughly relate to that. We never expected to have the world's favourite alcohol-free podcast downloaded millions of times across the globe. We thought no one would listen, but turns out they did. We never thought that we'd have a blossoming online community from people all over the globe. But we just kind of one foot in front of the other. Yeah, it just kind of happened, exactly, and now we're here. James, can I talk to you more about skill set, mindset, heart set? I've not heard it in those terms before. And I suppose bringing it back to alcohol-free life, can you achieve being an alcohol-free person if you've got the mindset and the heart set but not the skill set yet? Or if you've got the skill set and the heart set but not the mindset? Do you need to have all three in place to achieve? Or is it the kind of process of developing those things that lead to achieving the thing you want?
Yeah, great question. I think you can start with any of those, particularly when it comes to being alcohol-free. I think the biggest one is probably mindset. Our mind is a very powerful tool. We've got anywhere between 40 to 80,000 thoughts a day. 80% of them on average are very negative thoughts. We are very reactive humans. We're emotional beings. We use substances to escape. We use substances to meet our dopamine needs. So the mindset side of it, I think, is a really good place to start. It's a difficult place to start. But I think programming our mind to go, what is it I do want? Focus on what I do want rather than what I don't want. And often when we focus on what we don't want, we attract it. So I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink. I don't want to drink. Or I don't want to be fat. I don't want to be fat. All of a sudden, we're drawn to those things that make us want to drink, that make us want to eat more, that make us want to avoid the gym. I'm a big believer in positive psychology. So I think mindset's a great place to start. The skill set of alcohol-free is relatively simple. Whatever you lift and put to your mouth should have no alcohol in it. That's the skill set.
It is that simple, isn't it? Yeah.
That's it.
It's not harder than that.
No.
When you really boil it down, it's just, how do you stay alcohol-free? Well, every day you decide not to drink alcohol.
One day at a time. Yeah.
Which actually, I'm applying that. I'm 27 days vape free.
Nice.
And yeah, I'm really chuffed with it. I'm telling everyone, aren't I?
And so you should. I'm at that stage. Really well done.
Where I'm telling everyone. I mean, honestly, more addicted to the vape, I think, in the end than I was to cigarettes. Because I went to the vape thinking, well, I've smoked for years and I want to get off it. And, oh, this is a better alternative. But then I think ended up more addicted to the vape than I ever was to cigarettes. But again, that's just, you know, it's the skill set, simple there. For me, it was, what am I wise? So I did that, right? What am I wise? Why do I want to do this? Because you look like a plonker standing outside, sucking on this little blue stick that then you blow out blueberry air. Like you just look like a plonker, number one. I don't want the kids to see it. I'm spending £10 a day on this bloody thing, you know, which is £300 a month.
That's nearly mental.
£4,000 a year. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. But, you know, so that was the whys. And then I'm doing that thing where I'm transferring over £10 a day so that, you know, if I've had those moments, especially I'm looking at it going, but look at how much money you've saved. You know, when I'm feeling a bit wobbly, I'm going to talk to Jem, my wife, I'm feeling, oh, I could go out and get, well, don't do it for this and this and this, so I'm accountable. You know, so that's the skill set, a lot of kind of transferable things. I've now just got distracted talking about how great I am for giving up vaping, and I can't remember where it started.
Can I ask you about vaping? Yeah. Have you read the University College of London's research on habit installation?
No, I haven't.
It's fascinating. So University College of London set out to go, how long does it take to install a new habit to the point of automaticity? So automaticity is the point where you just automatically do it and you would never dream of lifting the vape. So how many days do you think it takes to get to a habit to automaticity?
I'm going to guess, because I'm sure I've heard this before, I'm going to guess 28 days.
Good guess, but you're not quite there. Sharon?
No.
Adding it, 40 days?
Okay, you're getting close. 66 days is what it takes on average to get most habits to automaticity. Some take a little bit longer, some might take a little bit shorter, but you're looking at 2 months. And they actually seem three separate segments of that. The first 22 days are very difficult. Most people quit. Most people find that they go back to it. The middle is what they call the messy middle, where it's like you might be hit or miss, you might be tempted, but you're kind of getting there. The last 22 days is almost like smooth sailing. The dopamine is reinstalling itself. You're feeling great. You're getting people saying how you look good, or, you know, things, you know, your bank balance is maybe looking good as well. So 66 days is on average. So you're already, how many days did you say in already?
27 days.
You're past the first, yeah, the first hurdle, that first 22 day, the most difficult thing.
That's why my guess was 28. It was just, I was hoping it was going to be tomorrow.
You're close.
That's where, so the skill set and, you know, I suppose that's mindset as well. I have to say, it's one of those things where I'm still developing the heart set. If the heart set is that kind of the visualization side, the manifestation side, the believe that you can achieve it thing, that's definitely the one that I'm still, that's the weakest of them, if you know what I mean. That's the one where every day I do it, it strengthens and I feel more and more, yes, I can do this. But that's the one where it's kind of, you know, a day by day activity. You can kind of get your head around other stuff and you've got to know what you've got to do. But that's the one where actually until you're doing it, where I think, you know, that very much relates to removing alcohol, until you actually do it and until you start building up those days and then that kind of confidence comes, you're like, oh my God. And actually, I think that's one of the great pleasures of removing alcohol, actually. It's that confidence building. Oh my God, I'm doing this. Mm. So you don't have to have all three nailed, basically, is what we're saying.
Definitely
not. You don't have to. You've got to get your head around it in some way, but you haven't got to have all three nailed.
Totally. And I think it's important that people need to remember, like, no one is born perfect. No one is born to be a prime minister. No one is born to be a CEO, to be a public speaker, whatever it is. Like, these are all learned traits, and behavior change is a learned trait. And for us, we're all full of BS. So belief systems. And, you know, I always say from stage, hey guys, you've got full permission. Just scream out the first thing that comes to mind and don't think about my feelings. But what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of an Irishman? So for you guys, what's the first thing?
Oh, don't ask us this.
You know anything? What? Terrible, but it's the aftermath of St. Patrick's Day in Liverpool and the absolute mess that was left on the streets.
There you go.
It was an outrage, James. It was an outrage.
I bet it was.
That's a nice
Sharon? Yeah.
I just think of Michael Flatley in Riverdance.
There we go. Anything else?
No, I do, but honestly, I do. I think of the music and the dancing. Guinness.
I think of Bewitched.
There you go. I often hear Guinness, denim. Leprechauns, fiddly-dee potatoes. I never hear great rugby team in New Zealand. They never think of Ireland having a great rugby team for some reason. But that's BS, right? That's our belief systems, and they're subconscious, and we have beliefs about money. So I often say to people, what's your belief about money, or what did someone tell you about money when you were a kid? The one that comes to mind for most is money doesn't grow on trees. I say, great. I was told the same thing. Did that help you with your relationship with money? Most likely not. So we have the same beliefs around alcohol. We either believe it's good, it's sexy, it's attractive, it's a poison, we have subconscious beliefs. And when I stopped drinking, my partner said, look at that advertisement. And it was like an advertisement on TV. And it was like during daytime. And it was pretty much glorifying alcohol. And then all I could see was these advertisements constantly that were promoting alcohol. I thought, this is horrific. If you've got to promote something so badly, then clearly it's not good for you. Because I don't see promotions for carrots. I don't see promotions for apples. Like, we just go and get those things. But these sugar substances, alcohol, like, they put so much, billions of dollars into the marketing. Why? It rewires our BS, our belief systems. When we see something often enough, or even just hear it, we start to believe it. And that's when you look at people who've been radicalized. They've heard something often enough, and there's an emotion attached to it. We are radicalized with alcohol, us humans. Like, certainly, at 16, 17, I was hooked. It was the thing I looked forward to. My biology or my chemistry teacher, Miss Spence, brought my parents in, and my mom came home and said, I'm mortified. So why is that? She says, Miss Spence says that on Monday, all she can hear you doing in the class is talking to your mates about where's the house party, what are we drinking, what's happening Friday night. And then by the time Friday comes around, all you're thinking about and talking about in class is who's going to be there and what are we going to drink. And I didn't see that as a problem. I just thought that's what all teenagers did. And I'd been radicalized to drink alcohol and seen it was very normal. It was normalized, and it was a slippery slope that took me a long time to get to the point where I'm like, hey, let's do 1 year. And it was just 1 year. That's all it was to start with. And we'll see how we go from 1 year.
Ah, so interesting.
Shaz, I know I've been talking loads. Do you want to ask a question or can I ask my next one?
Please, honestly, Ben, carry on. Go for it.
Because I really want to talk about the book that's coming out. This is right up my street, James. So the book is called Habits of High Performers.
That's it.
And my question is, through the course of this conversation, which of these habits have you recognised in myself and Sharon?
Yeah, cool.
Oh, I don't like that. I don't like that question.
I'm joking. This is good. That was a gag. What the question is, let's talk about the book. So why did you want to write it? And, you know, what are these habits that, because, you know, you remove alcohol, that's stage one. And what comes after that is growth in all sorts of areas. And a lot of our community members, a lot of our listeners, one of the main reasons people remove alcohol is because they want to perform as highly as possible. It's not about being the highest performer necessarily, but it's about being the highest performing version of themselves.
Exactly.
So what is it? What are the habits of high performers that we should be looking out for?
Yeah, so essentially I wanted to write the book because I started the podcast about 5 years ago. I was sitting in New Zealand, 12,000 miles from the action up in the UK. I thought to stay relevant and to stay connected, I've got to know what the best of the best do, how they think with health, mindset, money, entrepreneurship. So I just started interviewing people out of curiosity. I put it out there, but 2 years later, the podcast is getting number one ranked on Apple Podcasts, much to my surprise. And we have guests from Formula One people to prime ministers, presidents, billionaires, people who went from nothing to everything, lost it all and started again. So I started thinking about, well, there's so many stories to share. I've only got so many hours in the day. And at my events, people are saying, James, have you got a book? Have you got something I can take back to my team? I think, well, no, send them to the event next year. And so I had enough signals about the book to go, okay, maybe there's something in this. So I chatted with Penguin and HarperCollins. Both of them gave me a book deal. In the end, went with HarperCollins. And I want to try and distill what high performers do and how everyday humans can thrive at life and work. And that's what it's all about. It's not about winning an Olympic gold. If you want to do that, you'll figure out and you'll do it. It's about how do we win the day? And so these habits, I'm very much a storyteller. So I bring in a story for each of the habits, someone I've either coached or a personal story or someone that's been on the pod. And then here's a tool. How do we actually get radically clear? So the first habit's getting radically clear. And I think that vision precedes victory. So people who win their days are very clear about what they want, what they don't want. Second chapter is multiply your motivation. So like, how do we supercharge our desire to get the thing we want? And I often say high performers are hormonal. And that often gets people to go, what the hell are you saying? Are you trying to say that males and females have, you know, different advantages or disadvantages? Well, no. You can have all the mental determination and discipline to want something or quit something. But if your body's working against you, and you have low serotonin and your awful sleeps or your dopamine's spiking or your cortisol's raging, it's going to set you up for failure. So high performers really take stock of what's my body doing physiologically before we look at the psychology of it. So the book goes into different elements that we know high performers do. They are self-evaluators. So journaling's a massive tool that I share with my readers. I journal every day. I find it helps me stay on track, helps me stay clear. And so there, the book has seven pillars, seven habits that people can then work through bit by bit, and then the tools to implement them as well.
When's the book out, James?
Book will be out in September, early September.
That's Ben's Christmas present sorted.
Hey,
yeah, honestly, 100%. It's absolutely right up my street, this kind Isn't of stuff. It is, and you know, my wife Jem, she says, can't you just buy something that's a story? Why do you keep reading these boring business books, is what she calls
them. I love
them.
It. I love it.
It's just
Look
a broad term. Yeah. Like, and also, I'm currently, I'm doing an MBA at the moment, James.
Well done.
As well as a job and
God,
a family.
That's amazing.
I decided that I was going to do a strategic leadership and management course from the University of Exeter. It's really good. It's really, really good. I feel quite tired all the time at the moment.
Good on you.
But I'm consuming this stuff at the moment. Like, you know, they give us the reading, this, which you never know. You might be on it for the next cohort, James, with the book.
I love it.
But I inhale this stuff, and I just take one thing from it. I think a lot of people feel that way about this podcast as well. If you just take one thing from each episode. In fact, I feel like there's a question in that, Sharon. Do you? I feel like there's a question in there. James, what one thing would you like our listeners to take away from this episode?
Well done. I like that, Ben. Well done.
I tell you what, I don't know what's
going
on today.
He's flying tonight. Yeah, I wasn't expecting this.
These links, these slick radio segues.
He's all over it.
I love it. The one thing to take away is, you know, I think about Bronnie Ware a lot. So Bronnie, palliative care nurse, who spent a lot of time with people on their deathbeds. And she asked them one question. What do you regret? And she wrote a book called The Top Regrets of the Dying. And strangely, I bought this book because it really appealed to me. I thought, I'm going to die. We're all headed there. I want to have as little regrets as possible. So the top regret, and this is what I want the listeners to walk away with, the top regret of these people, old and young, mainly old, was that they regretted living their lives, making decisions based upon what they thought other people might think about them. So this is, what university did I go to? What subjects did I pick? What car did I drive? What clothes will I wear to my place of work? What drink might I drink to look cool? What holiday might I go on and take selfies? Get rid of all that crap and get clear, get radically clear on what's most important to you and live your life based on your terms. Be not like me, you know, the harmony side of me. Don't do that. Don't harmonize. Don't have the disease to please others. Please yourself. Lead your life on purpose. Choose to quit alcohol and stay that way day by day. But I think Bronnie Ware's book, it's one that everyone should read, The Five Regrets of the Dying. But that number one regret really stuck with me. And I've made many decisions based upon what other people might think about me. And no longer, like, who cares what other people think? It's a short life.
I don't know where to go next. This episode, it's
well, we
just,
haven't got long left.
No, Sharon. I know. I realise we're just about out of time. I feel like as well, James, that we've literally only scratched the surface of stuff to talk about. And yes, obviously we've talked about your alcohol-free journey and the fact you're almost 5 years sober. But a lot of what you've shared with us, you were doing a lot of this while still drinking, weren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So do you feel that you've proper ramped up in terms of high performance? Because, you know...
that's how they say it in Lancashire. Do you feel that, James? It's proper ramped up recently. Since you've been able to lose, is it proper ramped up, love?
I love that. I'm stealing that wee line.
But, I mean, obviously, you were performing at a pretty high level anyway, you know, given what we've talked about on this podcast. But we always say, no matter where you're at in life, no matter your job, your background, your social situation, whatever it is, you remove the alcohol and everything does start to level up, doesn't it? And so, 100%. You know, what about you? What was that like for you? And I realise we've literally just got a few minutes left now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Things have proper ramped up for sure. Like,
I'm chuffed to bits for you, James. I'm chuffed, really chuffed for you.
No, it has been brilliant. Caroline, my partner, would say the same. Like, we have more energy, more freedom, way more finance, because the decisions I made when I was drinking to book luxury holidays. I remember going to Samoa and spending, it was something ridiculous, like $7,000 on the alcohol tab at the end of like a 10-day trip. And I'm like, how the hell is that possible?
Oh my God.
Shouting people drinks and buying lots of food. And I would just be ridiculous when I'm drinking and super generous to a fault. And so saved a ton of money. My business has taken off. And like the book opportunity, I don't think would have even came around. Our event that we run, an annual event, it's increased 700% in terms of the numbers that come along and attend in just 3 years. So I just see so many positives. I'm up bright and early with Finn every day. We we get to explore together and have fun and travel. And I wouldn't be doing the same things if I was drinking, that's for sure. I'd be lazier, I'd be sleeping in, I'd have excuses, and then all the crap physical stuff that comes with it, the oily skin and the hangovers and all that stuff.
So, yeah, it has ramped up. You're doing all right. You're performing at a pretty decent level, I'd say. A little bit better. James, before you go, just let people know where they can find out more about you, website, socials, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love them to come and say hello. They can listen to the Lead on Purpose podcast on whatever platform they listen to. There'll be varied guests on there. They can also come and check out jjlachlan.com. And if they'd like a free planner, I've got a high performance planner. They can just go to jjlachlan.com/planner, and it's the same one that all my clients use, so it helps them with planning and strategizing and installing new habits. So
yeah, I'm laughing. Me better like that. Planner, free planner. Download immediately. James Lachlan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence.